Okay, so I'm going to talk about the ejecta of supernova 1987A, and I'm mainly going to talk about the 3D emissivity of the ejecta, but I'll also say something about the time evolution and our recent discovery of molecular hydrogen. So this is an HSD image of 87A with the three rings, as I'm sure you've all seen before. And this is how it looks if we zoom in on the part with the inner ring back in the mid-90s. So this is the ejecta, this is the ring, and this is just a star that's projected on top of the ring. And to just give you an idea of the slice of things, this ring is about 0.6 light years in radius, and the whole system has an inclination of 45 degrees. So the north part of the ring is pointing towards us. So 87A has been observed by the HSD almost every year, and I've put those images together as a movie, which will hopefully play. Yes, so you see as time goes by, the ejecta will expand, and then eventually you see all these hot spots appearing in the ring, and that's when the outermost ejecta are crashing into the ring. And then you see this funny shape of the ejecta developing, and I will talk about this. You get to see the same thing in a different colour scale, in case it wasn't clear. So what you can also note here is that this is evolving on a great time scale for an astronomer. So there's something interesting happening every year, but it's not so fast that it's stressful. So it's a very good object to work with. So as I said, the main thing I'll talk about is the inner ejecta. And so those ejecta are not yet interacting with the ring. So that means they're still in the homologous expansion phase, and they should directly probe the explosion geometry. I will not talk about the ring, so the only thing I will say is that it's now fading. So this is a difference image between 2014 and 2011. And so blue means that it's faded, and you see that the main part of the ring is faded, and instead it's like new small spots appearing just outside. So it seems the blast wave has gone through, and we're now seeing material outside. And there's a poster by Katia Migotto that has a lot more information about this. So the observations I will discuss were taken at about 10,000 days, so that was in 2014. And because the ejecta are expanding freely, we get the 3D information by combining images with spectra. And we do that in two different ways. So we can do it in the near-infrared using the Symphony Integral Field Unit at the VLT. So we have the H and K bands. And then in the optical, we use the HSD, where we cover the ejecta with these narrow slits. So these slits are 0.1 arcseconds wide. So this is really a major improvement compared to what we've done before in the optical. So I'm showing first just the total spectra of the ejecta. So this is the optical and this is the infrared. And for the 3D stuff, I will focus on the two strongest lines where we can get the most detailed information. So that's H-alpha. And in the near-infrared, it's this 1.644 micron line, which is a blend of silicon-1 and iron-2. But as you see, there's also several other strong lines like helium-1 and calcium-2, for instance. And I should also point out, we identify also emission from molecular hydrogen. And these lines are not strong enough to really give us 3D information, but I will discuss the detection at the end of the talk. So before I get to the 3D emissivity, I wanted to say something about the energy sources, because they affect what we will see. So right now there are two main energy sources that power different parts of the ejecta. We have the titanium-44 and we have X-rays from the ring. So this silicon plus iron line, we think, is powered by titanium-44. And that say that because it hasn't really changed in the past 10 years. So this is showing the integrated line profile of the ejecta in that line from 2005, 2011, and 2014. So as you see, the line profile doesn't change, and the small change you see in normalization is actually just within the uncertainties of the flux calibration. And also the morphology doesn't change apart from the expansion. The H-alpha does change, on the other hand, so it is now powered by X-rays, and you can see this in this light curve. So it's from the HST data, and it's starting at like 2,600 days. And you see it first decays, as you expect from the radioactive decay, and then there's a brightening, which is well explained by energy input from the X-rays from the ring. And this is also affecting the morphology. Oops, going the wrong way. So I can show this with just a movie of the ejector region. So this is the ejector in this very first observation. And if we run this, you see this expanding, but it has this kind of elliptical shape. And then when it starts brightening, it's the edges of the ejector that you see brightening. And it really correlates with the X-ray emission in the ring. So, with that in mind, let me show you some results. So this is for H-alpha. So all the spectra we're extracting from one of these small regions up here. And this is just showing the 2D spectrum from the central slit. So you have the main components. This is the ring. This is the reverse shock. And here you see the inner ejector. I actually don't know if you can see this dotted line also. That's contamination by the ring itself. And that's actually quite straightforward to remove because the line profile is so much narrower than the line profile from the ejector, so we can subtract this. And the result is the solid line. So this has the 3D information, but this is, of course, hard to look at. So I've tried to visualize this in two ways. So one way is just to take velocity slices through the ejector. So I've taken slices that are 1,000 kilometers per second wide. So just illustrating how this works here. So that means basically that each one of these panels will be a pixel in the resulting image. So let's see, I'm comparing with the silicon plus ion line. And the top row is just showing the extraction boxes where I'm looking. And then you have the results from blue shifted to red shifted for silicon plus ion and for H alpha. And I should point out this has a significantly lower resolution, which is due to how we correct for scattered light from the ring. So if you compare these, you see some interesting similarities. You see that the northern part of the ejector is mainly blue shifted. And then as we move on to red shifts, you see some emission appearing also in the south. And you also see that we have, in general, higher blue shifts compared to the red shifts. But then there are also, of course, big differences, like looking at any individual panel. Here's a bright blob in the north, whereas for H-alpha, it's in the west, and it's actually this bright region here that you see with a blue shift around 1,000 kilometers per second. And so another way to visualize this is to instead sum over the east-west direction and use the spectral information to create a view from the side. So the observer would be located on this side. And the black line shows the plane of the ring, which presumably defines the equator of the progenitor. And again, be careful with the central part here where we have reduced resolution when we correct for the contamination. So again, you're seeing this main thing with blue shifted emission in the north, which is kind of close to the plane of the ring. In the south, we have some more redshift, but not a lot, actually. And the brightest emission is actually very close to the plane of the sky. So we have this kind of broken dipole structure where the main emission is kind of in two bright regions which are not symmetric about the ring plane. And in the case of the symphony data, we can get the full 3D emissivity because we have the better resolution. This is the position of the observer. And here I've simply removed the stuff in the middle where we have contamination from the ring. And hopefully you see these two blobs. And this is really just showing the brightest emission that's above three times the continuum level. So before trying to draw some conclusions from this, I want to say something about the dust. So we've heard that there's a lot of dust in the ejecta, and that will inevitably affect the observations. But the only point I want to make here is that it seems like it's very unlikely that dust is the main reason why we see differences between these two lines. And the main reason for that is because this edge brighten morphology is really a natural consequence of the external X-ray illumination. It appears just as the X-rays become dominant, and it's well explained when you model it. There's also an interesting point in that bracket gamma shows a similar edge brighten morphology as H alpha, even though it's at a similar wavelength as the silicon plus iron. So from this, it seems likely that the dust is in optically thick clumps that are affecting the optical near-infrared in kind of the same way. So if we look at the large-scale structure, so that's ignoring all the kind of detailed clumps and so on, so in all the lines where we look, including ones I haven't shown you, we see a similar large-scale structure. So as projected on the sky, it's like this. From the side, roughly like this. And it's interesting to compare this to some of the very early observations that probe the outermost ejecta. So one of those was these mystery spots that were revealed by speckle imaging. And it was never really understood what they were. They appeared after about a month and then disappeared again within a few months. But you see, they actually they have the same orientation as this. And this one, I believe, was actually superluminal, and it had to be blue shifted in line with this. There were also light echoes, and the green is showing what's inferred based on the light echoes. So in the plane of the sky, which is kind of comparable to this, and this is from the side. And especially the southern part, where something that's close to the plane of the sky is very similar. And also, this agrees with the symmetry axis from the early time polarization measurements. So it seems like we have a kind of a large-scale global asymmetry that extends from the inner metal core, that's probed by this 1.64 micron line, to the outermost layers. But then, of course, looking at the details, there are lots of differences. For instance, this region, which is really bright in H alpha, the black is completely different in 1.64 micron, whereas we can see something very well defined in the spectrum here, in the north for silicon plus iron, which is, and H alpha is very different. So we see these kind of smaller scale structures, roughly on a scale of 1,000 kilometers per second. Although, as you know, we wouldn't resolve anything less than about 500 kilometers per second. And so we would like to compare this with explosion models. And the most suitable thing we have to compare with are these models, which are showing 3D isosurfaces of the nickel-rich ejecta. And this is for blue supergiants of 20 solar masses and 50 solar masses. Let's see. And so they're clearly asymmetric, but it's also clear that the observations have a much more prominent large-scale asymmetry with these two main blobs. So that could indicate perhaps there's some kind of large-scale perturbation that's not included in the model that is important, something like rotation or magnetic fields. But also, of course, there are some caveats in this comparison. This is not in the homologous phase. Although I noticed there was a poster where they run these much longer, and it doesn't seem to change that drastically. And also, it's probing the 3% isosurfaces, which is not really what we're probing with the observations. And from the observational side, I'm showing the emissivity, which is not the same thing as the mass, necessarily. So I think there's still some work to do before we can do a really direct comparison, but we're kind of getting there. And I seem to be running out of time just as I'm getting to the molecular hydrogen, so I'll do this kind of quickly. So this is showing K-band spectra from 2005 to 2014, and we identify this line, 2.12, with H2, and this one, there's actually three lines around 2.4 micron, also with H2. And this was predicted in models a long time ago, that it should form in the ejecta about after 2-3 years after the explosion. So it's very nice that we finally do see it. And there was no... we don't see any significant flux evolution, so it seems it's in a region where it's powered by the titanium. And that actually also agrees with the spatial distribution. So this is the H2 images. So it's very centrally concentrated as opposed to the H-alpha. So it's in a region where it's protected from the X-rays. And I should point out, these images are actually from 2005. That's why the ejecta looks smaller, because that was the best quality image in this line. So this is also showing that we have mixing of hydrogen into very low velocities. So that brings me to my conclusions. So I will just leave these up. And I can also mention that 87A was actually observed by the HST on Wednesday, so the day before yesterday. So there's more things to come. Thank you.
Questions?
Very nice work. And of course, the 3D reconstruction is of interest to me. First, a comment in your slide where you showed the mystery spots and other indications that asymmetry. May also mention that early speckle interferometry showed very early on that asymmetry was built in within the first couple months. They were seeing that asymmetry that ended up being the same directions that you showed there. So it shows that this is barely embedded in the explosion as you're showing. Now, in the case of CAS-A, I constantly need to remind myself that nature is only showing me some portions of it. So in the case of 87A, you have these two blobs, and there's nothing really in the center. At least there seems to be a separation. How much of that can you believe? Are you fairly confident that there's no material there? Are things being hidden? Is it an artifact of how you reduced it in the sense that you had to remove the central lines from the shock interactions? I mean, sorry, the CSM interactions?
So it's looking at this, it's not like there's no material right at the center. There's still emission here. So it's just the brightest clumps are these two things.
Okay, perhaps I'm being misled. Then in the 3D rotation that you show...
Oh, in the 3D, I actually cut out the middle part just to remove that bias. So that's completely artificial, this one. I've just cut out the central plus minus 400 kilometers per second just to get rid of the contamination.
Okay, and then I just briefly, and I'll let it go, then it connects in the center there, or is it...
Yes. Well, there's emission there. I don't know exactly how it connects, but yeah, there's emission.
Okay, over here.
Thank you very much for your nice talk. And I have a question about the amount of titanium 44 to explain the silicon ion emission lines. Is that consistent with the observed titanium gamma ray lines?
The mass of the titanium
44? Mass of the titanium 44.
Yeah, so I believe it's just it's all about consistent within the error bars, the different estimates that exist, also from the spectral modeling and the new star results and so on.
Okay, so how much fraction of gamma ray is coming out as gamma rays, and how much gamma rays is going into the heating source?
Oh, that's a good question. I actually don't know.
Okay.
I'll have to check.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, let's thank the speaker again.